the top stories. Iran says reaching a sustainable deal on the revival of the JCPOA requires practical and verifiable measures by the U.S. Iraqi media say a major U.S. military base near the capital, Baghdad, has come under a rocket attack. And a top Russian official warns of NATO's nuclear threat as the standoff over Ukraine shows no sign of letting up. Welcome to the program. Iran says it has a serious will to reach, in the shortest possible time, a good agreement on the revival of the 2015 deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, better known as the JCPOA. The comment was made by the Iranian foreign minister, who spoke with UN Chief Antonio Guterres on the phone. Hossein Amir Abdullahian described as positive the process of the ongoing talks in Vienna on the JCPOA revival talks and the removal of sanctions. He pointed out to a lack of trust in the U.S., saying a reliable and lasting agreement requires practical, tangible, and verifiable measure by the West and Washington. Guterres, on his part, for his part, welcomed any progress in the Vienna negotiations, which are underway between Iran and the remaining JCPOA signatories. The U.S. is taking part in the talks indirectly because it withdrew from it and reinstated sanctions on Iran. The Iranian president warns that the presence of foreigners in West Asia increases insecurity in the region. We discussed that issue with our guests in our news review program.
The Iranian president expresses concern over the presence of foreigners in West Asia, warning that such presence increases insecurity in the region. Ibrahim Raisi stressed the importance of cooperation among regional countries for ensuring peace and security. He noted that such cooperation is also beneficial for the progress of regional nations. Raisi made the remarks in a meeting with the Qatari foreign minister in Tehran. Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani also echoed the Iranian president's stance on regional cooperation, noting that the presence of foreign forces will have adverse consequences for the region. The Qatari minister is on an official visit to Iran for a series of high-level meetings on regional issues. He met with his Iranian counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, earlier on Thursday. Let's bring in Kent Stone, a Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, who joins us from Hamilton, Ontario. Kent Stone, welcome. We also have Sarah Flounders, co-director of the International Action Center, joining us from New York. I'm going to start with you, Kent Stone. You know, something very interesting happened recently, Kent Stone, and that was when you had the UAE foreign minister visit Syria. And you also have Saudi Arabia that is in this rapprochement phase with Syria, not to mention also with Iran. So we're seeing changing dynamics. And it's actually in a faster gear, if I might say, with the Iranian president, Ibrahim Raisi. So doesn't that change the calculations, or shouldn't it change the calculations of the U.S. when it comes to this region, and then by default of Israel when it comes to these countries? Because we know that Israel bombs Syria rather repeatedly.
It should change the calculations for the U.S., and it should change the calculations for Israel. And I think that the calculation is that the U.S. may have overreached its imperial boundaries, or in its desperate and chaotic retreat from Afghanistan. And I think that the fact that the U.S. Has also lost its regime change war in Syria, though it still occupies the eastern third of Syria, and the fact that it's losing alongside the Saudi coalition its war against Yemen, as the people of Yemen are taking the war right back into the UAE and into Saudi Arabia. I think the U.S. is probably... they're probably burning the midnight oil in the Pentagon or in the State Department there, trying to figure out how they are going to manage to keep the, a presence, if at all, in the Middle East, while at the same time pivoting to Asia, that is to say, threatening China, and the saber-rattling in the Ukraine, and, you know, building up forces in Eastern Europe. I think the U.S. can't handle all this at once, and something's got to give. The resistance in Iraq is lobbing missiles into the green zone in Baghdad and attacking U.S. convoys. In Syria, there are attacks on the U.S. bases that they have illegally built there. In Yemen, the people of the Ansarallah movement is carrying the fight right into Saudi Arabia and the UAE. I think the tide is turning, and I think that the resistance will win, and the U.S. will be forced to leave the Middle East, as the Iranian general Qasem Soleimani, who was martyred 2 years ago, was trying to do. And I think that his assassination 2 years ago has accelerated the process.
Yeah, and to put all of that into one plate, Sarah Flounder, so to speak, you have another occurrence that has happened, which adds, I think, another dimension to this in terms of the U.S. forcing itself in the region. And that was when you had these naval military drills that happened between Russia, China, and Iran. And I believe this is a message that's being sent, this trilateral alliance, to the U.S., because it's obviously in a crisis mode with Russia. It has pivoted towards China. And maybe I'm asking you, is that a message to the U.S. that, you know, your time is up? Because in all the other things that Ken Stone said, you know, they're being obviously retaliated against.
Well, there couldn't be a clearer way to send a message to get the attention of the Pentagon war planners than the joint military exercises, Russia, China, Iran, because these are countries that have been able to withstand the complete U.S. takeover of the entire region, that are forces of resistance and national sovereignty. So they're coming together and coordinating their actions at a time when the U.S.-NATO alliance is in deep disarray. That's a lot of what is fueling the crisis in the Ukraine, how to get everybody on board to be the vicious force they've been in the past. They had a complete disarray in Afghanistan. It was an absolute humiliation in front of the whole world. They weren't able to hold on to one base. They weren't even able to get out in an organized way. They do know that their days are really limited in Iraq and in Syria. So when you see their disarray and this growing coordination among countries that are determined to pursue their own development, their own sovereignty, and to connect with each other, and to connect also with other countries that are sanctioned and are smaller and weaker. When Iran sends oil to Syria through to Lebanon, that is a statement of solidarity. It's all countries so beleaguered, you don't stand alone. Or when Iran sends oil to Venezuela, which allows them to move their oil onto world markets. So each of these steps, when there's coordination with China's Belt and Road program for greater internal infrastructure development, this is a new day. And actually, years ago, I believe it was Kissinger who warned that the nightmare policy for the United States would be if ever Iran and Russia and China were to come together. So here we see that in this military coordination. It's just a beginning step, but it does show there is an understanding that together they can resist and they can help others resist, and they're refusing a policy of divide and conquer. So thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Sarah Flounders. We appreciate it. Co-director of the International Action Center from New York, Kent Stone, thank you for your contribution. Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War from Hamilton, Ontario. And with that, we come to an end of this news review. Thanks for tuning in.
Iraqi media say a military base housing American forces near Baghdad's international airport has come under attack. According to the media reports, the base known as Camp Victory was attacked by 6 rockets. Still no word on possible casualties or material damage. There's been no immediate claim of responsibility either. Camp Victory and the other U.S. military bases in Iraq have frequently been targeted. In the past some months, the incidents have grown since the U.S. assassinated top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani and a senior Iraqi commander in January 2020. Both were key anti-terror icons. The assassination gave a rise to the calls for the withdrawal of American forces from Iraq. The Syrian military prosecution says it has obtained and documented evidence on numerous U.S. violations in Syria during the years-long war. It also vowed to judicially pursue all Americans who committed crimes or undermined the state's sovereignty. Muhammad Ali is in Damascus.
It's what occupation looks like. U.S. troops wander around an independent country without any legal justification, invitation, or UN mandate. The U.S. officially intervened in Syria in 2014 under the pretext of fighting Daesh, something Syria dismisses as lies. The military prosecution in Syria held a press conference asserting it has collected evidence of U.S.-Daesh cooperation in Syria.
The military prosecution in Syria obtained material evidence that the U.S. has almost direct control over Daesh and its terrorist activities in Syria using its illegal base in Al-Tanf. We have proof that many Daesh terrorists are being trained by U.S. forces in that base. We monitor the terrorists moving freely there with their weapons and vehicles.
For years, the U.S. has been looting Syria's oil after occupying areas in the oil-rich north and northeastern territories. The military prosecution in Syria vowed to judicially pursue the U.S. for all its crimes.
The result of our investigations into the U.S. violations in Syria, which led to destruction and casualties, threat to our sovereignty, theft of oil and wheat, illegitimate sanctions, and control over Daesh on territories of a UN member state, enables us in the near future to officially make accusations against the U.S. administration and its forces in Syria.
The military prosecution also accused the U.S. of promoting division by supporting a separatist ideology among the so-called SDF, providing them with weapons and ensuring they get all Syria's oil, let alone the U.S. airstrikes, which killed or displaced thousands of Syrians and destroyed its infrastructure. It hasn't been a day or two, a month or a year. It's been almost 8 uninterrupted years of U.S. violations in Syria, at least since the intervention of the U.S.-led coalition. But regardless of how much time they're planning to stay, Syrian officials don't spare a chance to reiterate that their country will be liberated from terrorism and illegal foreign presence. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says his country does not want war with neighboring Ukraine, but at the same time will not allow its security interests to be ignored. Lavrov was speaking at a press conference in Moscow a day after the U.S. and NATO responded to the security demands raised by Russia. He said U.S. proposals were better than those received from NATO. Lavrov added, Russia is analyzing the proposals, and President Vladimir Putin will decide how to respond. On Thursday, the top Russian diplomat said both NATO and American proposals had failed to address his country's concerns over the Western military alliance's expansion eastward. Russia wants NATO to reject Ukraine's membership bid. The West accuses Russia of a troop buildup at the border to invade Ukraine. Russia says the move is aimed at self-defense. They are at odds over Ukraine for weeks now. Russia says the Western military alliance, NATO, is developing the capacity for nuclear strikes against Russian military. The country's top arms control official, Vladimir Yermakov, has spoken on what he called joint nuclear missions between NATO countries. He says in those missions, non-nuclear NATO members are housing American B-61 nuclear bombs. A Russian official says the same members are taking part in training sessions to develop American nuclear capabilities aimed at his country. He's urged an end to those missions and says all American nuclear weapons must return to U.S. territory. The Russian official said these demands were included in a list Moscow presented to the West in December. North Korea confirms its latest missile launches amid growing tensions with the United States over the country's nuclear weapons program. State media KCNN said KCNA, that is, said one of the tests was an upgraded long-range cruise missile and the other one was a warhead of a tactical guided missile. On Wednesday, the South Korean military said it detected the launch of two short-range ballistic missiles. The launches drew condemnation from the United States. North Korea has recently said it will bolster its defenses against the United States and consider resuming all temporarily suspended activities. South Korea's COVID cases keep surging, with the country logging yet another record in its daily infection. South Korea posted more than 16,000 new infections for Thursday. That's the highest daily case number since the start of the pandemic. Daily COVID infections hit record highs on Wednesday and Tuesday as well. They have been rising steadily in the past 2 weeks because of the Omicron variant that is highly contagious. Health authorities in South Korea are now warning that daily caseloads could surge to five-digit figures in the coming weeks if the current pace of the Omicron spread continues. The government has extended restrictions on businesses to contain the virus. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro denounces the opposition for its attempt to recall a referendum against him. Venezuela's National Electoral Council has declared the president's opponents and did not collect enough signatures for the vote against him. The bid needed 4.2 million signatures of support to go ahead, but according to the Electoral Council, roughly 42,500 were received. Under Venezuela's constitution, officials who have completed at least half their term can be removed from office by a vote. President Maduro completed the first 3 years of his second term just earlier this month. The opposition blames him for the existing economic hardships. Maduro says U.S. sanctions, including those on oil, are to blame.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Economic multilateralism and broader relations with the world, particularly neighboring countries, is to be Iran's new foreign policy basis. This is decades on from the early days after the 1979 revolution that sung neither East nor West Islamic Republic. Now, in still talking independence, but with friends East and West, Iran is veering more eastwards. That's after a battered-down JCPOA or 2015 nuclear deal just dragged on as Western parties to the deal stood by to watch Iran commit to that multilateral deal almost unilaterally. Early signs of this policy of strengthening ties with Eastern powers and neighbors surfaced with President Raisi, Iran's new president's visit to Tajikistan. There he initiated the process of Iran's upgrading its observer status with the SCO to permanent member, the SCO being the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It didn't stop there, but carried on into talks with Russia and Saudi Arabia. What was said? To listen in, stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today, as I focus more on Russia in this episode. Talks with Russia were to prepare for an agreement with that eastern giant, similar to the one Iran signed with China, meaning the 25-year Iran-China Strategic Partnership Agreement. Iran's Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian bore tidings of an imminent implementation of that sweeping economic and security document signed between Iran and China. The document deems China will invest nearly $400 billion in a wide range of projects in Iran in exchange for discounted oil for 2 decades. Mr. Vafai is a Tehran University professor with a new deputyship position at the International Relations Department. He specializes specifically in all matters China, past and present.
Iran and China have had relations with each other, very good ones at that. If you look at the data on Iran's imports from and exports to China, you'll see that China would buy Iranian oil and do projects in the country. Finance was going on too. Apart from the pandemic and Trump's maximum pressure campaign, Iran and China have had normal relations. What's changed is that the ties have taken a strategic angle. Before the agreement, Iran and China have had project-based cooperation. This meant that, for example, a deal would be reached for China to buy a specific amount of oil from Iran for the next 2 years, and then the tankers would go back and forth.
January the 19th heard an interesting exchange between the presidents of Iran and Russia as they sat well apart for COVID concerns during Ibrahim Raisi's visit to Moscow. Raisi reminded Vladimir Putin of how Iran had resisted America for 40 years, and looking at how Russia's own confrontation with America was now deepening, Raisi said it was time to take on the power of the Americans with an increased synergy between our two countries. So, modeled on the 25-year Iran-China document, Iran and Russia now discussed a 20-year agreement between themselves. This deal would focus on technology transfers from Russia and the purchase of Russian military equipment, as well as Russian investment in the Iranian energy infrastructure. Mr. Rezvanpour, PhD, is an analyst specializing in matters Caucasian and Caspian with an interest in all manner of Iranian foreign policy. He joined us at Press TV studios.
Creating alliance depends on each country's, national agenda, in my opinion. Improving relationships and also in security matters with Russia will just obtain both countries' results. We have seen this cooperation in Syria. Russia has a place to play, in the Middle East, and that was the Syria. So, in my opinion, just signing 20 years contracts with Russia will provide Iran much more economic, advantages rather than security and defense advantages. Because if they improve their relationships, they can count on thwarting any plot which is being placed by Western countries against these two countries.
China is a world economic giant, but Russia remains the military giant of the Eastern Bloc without being an all-consuming Soviet Union anymore. And so Iran opted for Russia over an America that may have attacked Iran after its wars on Afghanistan and Iraq in 2001 and 2003 respectively, that rendered Iranian borders vulnerable. And so 20 years ago, this country came to an understanding with Moscow that Russia would not only not attack Iran, but would not help any attacking force either, nor would it allow others to attack Iran from Russia. Given regional changes 20 years on, however, Iran now presented Russia with a new document as the foundation for rebooted ties between the two states. The discussed 20-year pact between Iran and Russia would boost the trade between the two up to $10 billion, probably with national currency, and this would break the dominance of the dollar.
Iran and Russia need to make a long-term deal without a doubt. There are different reasons warranting a deal, including shared borders, the Caspian Sea, Central Asia, issues related to Afghanistan, and other matters of shared interests. China has recently entered the calculations in West Asia and displayed interest in the region. The visit of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council's foreign ministers to China is another signal showing China's interest in West Asia. Iran must definitely have a long-term plan with such a country.
While energy cooperation MOUs were signed during President Raisi's visit to Moscow, the two countries, Russia and Iran, agreed to identify mutual agricultural capacities for an exchange of agricultural products, and also to activate the North-South transport corridor. Iran's being a major link on that route would make the time and distance much shorter in transiting goods from the northern countries such as Russia to southern countries such as India. Mr. Qahramanpour is a political analyst with a doctorate in political science. He shared his views on Iran's look to the east via Skype.
A renewed emphasis on stability and continuity of close ties between Tehran and Moscow, despite U.S. pressures, is another message of this visit. It shows that despite the differences, especially those in the Caucasus, that led some observers to believe their bilateral ties would suffer, Iran and Russia enjoy close relations. Mr. Raisi's visit to Moscow showed that small differences won't get in the way of Tehran and Moscow's continued and close cooperation.
But for Iran, more important than an economic partnership with Russia is a military and intelligence alliance. And given relaxed sanctions, thanks to the JCPOA, whatever its state, Iran has become more intent yet on purchasing Russian military equipment, especially Sukhoi Su-35 fighter planes, an S-400 missile system, and military satellite. No deal has been signed publicly for that yet, though. But Russia and Iran both face a challenge, that is Iran's peaceful nuclear program. Russia has, like China, played a positive role in supporting Iran's rights with nuclear matters and lifting the embargo. But at the same time, it has convinced this country to continue negotiations on the basis of earlier talks. But without accepting all concessions made by the former Rouhani government, which was decisively more pro-West than the present administration. Regarding the recent Iran-Russia talks, Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian said, "Today we are following up on more important agreements so that we can reach a good agreement in Vienna in a short period of time." In this regard, China's role alongside Russia is very important.
This triangular has already been created in the past couple of years, especially mainly, in the last 10 or 20 years. Because China is the main consumer of Iranian oil. Russia count on Iran regarding Middle Eastern peace and stability, you see? So Iran is a great, player in these two countries' conclusion in international relationships. They cannot, isolate Iran. Neither Russia and China, nor European Union and also the United States are not able to isolate Iran.
Iran's new foreign policy approach is planned within a framework of balanced foreign policy and dynamic intelligent diplomacy and interaction, with a focus on three east-leaning priorities: a neighborly policy, an Asia-oriented policy, and an economy-oriented diplomacy.
Improving relations with our neighbors is the main priority of Mr. Raisi's foreign policy. You know, the first sign of just trying to release the pressure regarding sanctions was permanent membership of Iran in Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and it was a very good sign for Iran, because Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the most important seller and also buyer of energy in the world. You see, 42% of world population belongs to Shanghai Cooperation Organization.
Neighborly relations haven't been without a downside, and Iran yet has debts to collect. Thus far, Iran has been able to reach an agreement with Iraq on debt collection and resolve the debt problem with Turkmenistan and enter a new chapter of interactions with regional countries including Oman and Qatar and Kuwait. It has also re-entered cooperation with the UAE, as well as resuming talks with Saudi Arabia and taking it to a new level, as exemplified by Amir Abdullahian.
We are now a regional power. There are several trans-regional powers, including China, Russia, and the US. There are also some emerging powers, including India and Brazil. Iran has to balance its relations with them. Whenever the balance is disrupted, we'll suffer the consequences. It's interesting to note that we've seen these policies implemented by both the reformists and principalists. China's vote at the Security Council is very significant, and getting that vote could be very helpful.
For a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Plenty more to be said, but only after a quick news review on the third joint naval drill between Iran, Russia and China, and other matters. Here's how they worded it. The Financial Tribune points to the drill, the third drill between Iran, China and Russia, which was held in the northern Indian Ocean, Friday, January the 21st. The Iranian Navy and the naval forces of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps took part in the 2022 Marine Security Belt exercises over an area of 17,000 square kilometers. Rear Admiral Mostafa Tajuddini said this. He's the spokesman for the war games. The drills included various tactical exercises such as rescuing a burning vessel, releasing a hijacked vessel, and shooting at air targets at night. Strengthening the security of international maritime trade, combating piracy and maritime terrorism, exchanging intelligence in the field of maritime rescue missions, and exchanging operational and tactical experience are among the objectives of the exercise. The three countries started joint naval drills in 2019 in the Indian Ocean and the Sea of Oman area, Tajuddini said. Regarding closer ties with neighbors, Tehran Times has it, hopes rise for a new chapter in Iran-Turkey ties. Quoting the Atlantic Council. In a commentary on January the 20th, the Atlantic Council said hopes have been raised for a new chapter in relations between Iran and Turkey as Ebrahim Raisi has ascended to power, whose administration favors neighbors first policy. The commentary says the policy that President Raisi's administration is following is to reduce tensions between Iran and its most immediate neighboring countries, such as Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. On November the 15th, 2021, Turkey's Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu met Raisi and his Iranian counterpart Hossein Amir Abdullahian in Tehran, where they deliberated over economic relations, concerns over their shared border, and ongoing developments in the region. In a joint press conference with Amir Abdullahian, the Turkish Foreign Minister talked about the two countries' willingness to work on a roadmap for a long-term comprehensive cooperation upon Iran's proposal. To move just beyond the borders of present Iran and its 31 provinces, including Azerbaijan, to the Republic of Azerbaijan, Mehr News reads, Iran-Azerbaijan discuss prospects for military cooperation. Iranian Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani met and held talks with Azerbaijani Ambassador to Tehran Ali Alizadeh on the military cooperation. During the meeting, the sides emphasized Azerbaijani and Iranian presidents' special attention to bilateral relations and hailed the close ties between the two countries. They stressed the necessity of continuing cooperation between Azerbaijan and Iran in all fields, as friendly and close neighbors. They touched upon issues of cooperation in military and military technical fields. The two sides also had a broad exchange of views on prospects for strengthening fruitful cooperation, as well as the organization of reciprocal visits, enhancing the exchange of information and implementation of joint projects. That'll be it for the news section, but do stay tuned for the rest of the show. It was on March the 27th, 2021. Iran and China signed the 25-year Comprehensive Cooperation Agreement. It was when Wang Yi, the Chinese foreign minister, visited his then-Iranian counterpart, Javad Zarif, in Tehran. The agreement, which guarantees economic and cultural interaction between the two states, introduces Iran to the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative. That's the plan through which China aims to build a wide network of infrastructure projects from East Asia to Europe. It's worth trillions of dollars.
These long-term partnerships are quite helpful in nature, but it depends on how the two sides perceive it and how much understanding is there between them. When two nations have a strategic look towards the ties, they'd need a long-term plan. Otherwise, the strategic part wouldn't materialize. It's like a marriage. When two people make a deal to live with each other for a long time, they have to have a plan, the basis of which is how much they know each other.
As it is, even with US sanctions in place, China has been in a place of enough power and will to buy Iran's boycotted oil, even if by barter and at a third of its optimum price. But it has helped keep the Iranian economy afloat all the same. In December 2021, China reportedly shipped in 1.9 million barrels of Iranian oil. That's just under 260,500 tons. And by the 21st of January 2022, China had offloaded nearly 4 million barrels of Iranian crude oil into state reserve tanks.
The 25-year agreement with Iran shows that China considers Tehran a top player in regional equations, along with Saudi Arabia, the UAE and Egypt. This shows China attaches great importance to adjusting ties with Iran. We know that China buys a majority of its oil from the Persian Gulf region. Therefore, the region's security is paramount for Beijing. We know that Iran and Saudi Arabia play important roles in establishing security in the Persian Gulf. Then, the 25-year agreement shows the regional significance of Iran for China.
Iran made sure to make note of its new approach at the 67th United Nations General Assembly when its foreign minister got to talk to Western officials, say his German counterpart, Heiko Maas. He said, "The other signatories of the JCPOA must have flexibility and understand the new situation following the inauguration of the new Iranian administration. In other words, they must speed up the sanction lifting promised in the JCPOA, as Iran did its part of limiting its nuclear program till before the US binned the deal in 2018 and left Western European signatories gaping, helpless and despair."
There is no doubt that expanding relations with different countries can reduce the pressure that the United States puts on Iran and also help Iran to neutralize the sanctions imposed by the United States. Of course, we don't know how exactly these measures can cancel out the sanctions yet, but what's clear and we have experienced in the past is that expanding ties with emerging powers, especially China and Asian countries, helps Iran to reduce the effectiveness of the sanctions.
Regarding its Russia-Iran talks, Iran stressed the importance of expanding cooperation in the fields of science, society, culture and media for stable long-term relations. And the administration supports Russia's initiative of holding a meeting of speakers of parliaments of Iran, Russia, Turkey, Pakistan and China in the fight against terrorism. The fight against terrorism in the region, Iran and Russia have recognized as common ground they have covered. Now to go beyond, Iran prides itself as the winner at two fronts, in the battles against terrorism and the US maximum pressure campaign of sanctions. At the same time, this country has extensive economic potential in various areas such as agriculture, energy, industry and technology. This makes for beneficial bilateral and multilateral ties with any country, east or west.
Some Western countries are critical of this policy and advocate unilateralism. But the reality is that the world is changing. The international system is moving towards multilateralism and multipolarity. In that case, it's logical for us to move towards different poles. But we emphasize balance in the relations. We need to ensure that the balance isn't tipped to a specific country, region, or bloc's favor. The balance must be maintained.
Leaning more east, India is among countries Iran has an eye for deepening relations with. Iran's location on the North-South corridor can make trade from India to Russia and Europe less expensive and more prosperous. As for neighboring or West Asian Muslim states, by mid-January, three Iranian diplomats arrived in Saudi Arabia to reopen Iran's representative office to the 57-member Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, in Jeddah.
Saudi Arabia has accepted that improving relations with Israeli regime will not bring security to Persian Gulf. You know, they just improved and expanded their relationships with Israel under the Abraham Accord, which was the outcome of President Donald Trump's pressure on these two countries, I mean, United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. So they came to this conclusion that if they expand their relationships with Iran, which is the main player of the greater Middle East, they will gain much more security in the Persian Gulf and also the greater Middle East.
Ties were severed in early January 2016 by Saudi Arabia. That's when a number of angry protesters attacked the Saudi embassy in Tehran in answer to the Saudi execution of the prominent cleric Nimr al-Nimr. But since April 2021, the regional powers have engaged in four rounds of direct negotiations facilitated by Iraq, and a fifth round is underway. Another cause for contention between Iran and Saudi is the war in Yemen, as they have supported opposing sides. Mojtaba Zonnouri, member of Iran's National Security Parliamentary Committee, has confirmed that a new chapter is opening in Iran-Saudi Arabia relations, and talks have been held on the conservation, furnishing and equipping and reopening the Iranian and Saudi embassies in one another's territories.
Iran and Saudi Arabia are two important powers in West Asia and have significant common interests in the region. For example, security in the Persian Gulf would not be sustainable without the cooperation of Iran and Saudi Arabia. As in the 1970s, Nixon's policy was based on U.S. cooperation with Iran and Saudi Arabia to establish security in the Persian Gulf. In addition, the conflicting interests and rivalry between Iran and Saudi Arabia have cost countries like Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen. This logic over the past few years has made Iran and Saudi Arabia try to reduce the intensity of their rivalry and tensions.
During his visit to the State Duma of Russia, President Raisi made a speech that hints at the goal of Iran's foreign policy in general. It certainly doesn't believe in the U.S. strategy of hegemony and occupation, as that has ended in failure, looking at America as having had to flee Iraq and Afghanistan, as he put it. Pointing that America is currently in its weakest state, Raisi said, to summarize his words, "Today, strengthening Iran-Russia relations in bilateral and multilateral forms will boost the economies of the two nations and strengthen regional and international security. The purpose and basis of this cooperation and interaction is the mutual interests of nations and the increasing formation of a civilized global community." That'll be it for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do join us again at the same times next week and each week after, as you never know what's on. Bye for now.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge. Oh,
You are listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters and dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at the supplications of Al-Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, found in his beautiful book As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyya, and to be specific, we are at supplication number 8, and we are at the third vice that the Imam Salamullah alayhi seeks refuge in Allah in, and that is what he calls وَغَلَبَتِ الْحَسَد, and when jealousy takes over. We were talking about how do we treat jealousy. Previously we said the first thing we need to do is to get to know Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala a little bit more better and strengthen our belief in Him, because that's the cause to us having jealousy in the first place. Two, we need to look at the bad and devastating effects of jealousy. Now, with anything in life, if we want to stay and refrain from doing it, if there's something that we want to refrain and stop doing it, is first we look at the effects of it. What are the bad effects of it? So, for example, when we want to educate people about gambling or about drugs or about alcohol, we always look at the bad and negative effects that these things cause to the person and to society. So when one, for example, reads about the dangers of gambling or alcohol or drugs or smoking and all these bad habits, when you see how dangerous it is for one body, for one health, for one's wealth, then you say, you know what, it's not worth it, I'm not gonna do it, right? So looking at the devastating effects and dangerous effect of anything, usually that helps people refrain. And you see that even today, you see that in the packaging of cigarettes, for example, they put like really, really picture that will set you off, of lungs and of, you know, the human body from the inside, to prevent you from smoking. So that's sometimes a method that works. Now let us take a short break, then we will continue right after.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyya of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana, Rabbana.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, dear listeners. You are still listening to me trying to talk about the effects or the negative effects of jealousy. So if I get to realize that something is dangerous, something has negative effects, that should help stop me from doing it, if it does not help me completely refraining and stopping from it. And with hasad, with jealousy, the first person that gets affected by it is the person who is jealous himself. So if I'm jealous, if I'm a jealous person, I will end up harming myself before anyone else. Why? First of all, those who are jealous, they feel, because they compare themselves and they look at other people, they will always feel upset, they'll always feel sad, they'll always feel regret. So any negative feeling, it will be in their system, because they're constantly looking at other people, they're constantly comparing. So they, dissatisfaction, discontentment is not in their hearts and in their system anymore. So what kind of a life would a person live when he's not happy, he's not content, and he's constantly looking at other people and comparing and, you know, hating himself for it? Now, obviously, this is something that nor me nor you want to do. And it will deprive a person of the pleasures of life, the comforts of life. Because whenever he looks at himself, he sees that he has nothing, he sees that he hasn't achieved much, he sees that people are better than him, and then he lives his entire day in worry, in stress, and in, you know, all these thoughts in his mind, which deprive him in the end of the pleasure and the relaxation of life itself, because he's constantly elsewhere. So why should I put myself in this position and deprive myself of relaxation and fun and all the pleasures that this life has to offer, and I'm constantly occupied by looking at other people? So you see that with hasad, I am the one who will be affected first and foremost. The hasid himself will be affected first and foremost, not other people. Now let us take a short break, then we continue right after.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to IRIB English Radio, to the program Bridge. We are talking about the effects of hasad and how we can treat this hasad, this jealousy. So we said first and foremost, the person himself will be affected by this action. Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam, he has beautiful hadith or few hadith in this regard when he talks about people harming themselves by becoming jealous. He says in a hadith, أَقَلُّ النَّاسِ لَذَّةً الْحَسُودِ. Amongst the people, the one that gets the least pleasure in life is he who is jealous. And simple, because he's not content with what he has, therefore he's not going to be happy with whatever he has. So even though he has a house, even though he has a car, even though he is healthy, even though he has kids and whatever he needs, but because he sees it as not being enough, then he's not going to enjoy the pleasures that life has to offer. So he's constantly elsewhere. Now that itself is a mental illness. So the Imam alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, he said the first people that will get affected is in fact the jealous people themselves. Then again, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam says, La rahat li hasood. There's no comfort for a jealous person. He's not comfortable. As long as people are better than him, he's not comfortable. You know, he constantly wants people, he wants the whole world to burn while he relaxes, and that's not going to happen. So people are comfortable in their own places and in their own houses. They're eating and drinking and having pleasure, and this guy's sitting at home and he's wasting all his time and all his relaxation and all his pleasure just by thinking about other people and how they're having it good, and he's living a miserable life. Well, obviously that's not going to help either. And then Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, in another hadith, then he said, the one who is jealous, he's always overwhelmed by this negative feeling. Because obviously, he's constantly thinking about other people. He's not happy. So, whether this ahadith of Amir al-Mu'mineen or other ahadith that we have from the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt, it all indicates that the one that's going to get harmed, the one that will be affected, first and foremost, is he who is jealous. So why should I cause myself harm to begin with? Why should I put myself in harm's way? So if I think about these effects, that should help me refrain and control my jealousy. We'll leave it here and we'll continue in the episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al-Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را، هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.